It's the campaign home stretch, 4 days to go until Election Day. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden hitting multiple critical states in the upper Midwest. Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, October 30th, 2020. We'll have the latest from the campaign trail in just a moment. Also, not just the presidential and congressional races being voted on, we will talk with the project director at Ballotpedia about ballot initiatives across the country. Democrats on the House Select Committee on the Coronavirus Crisis releasing a report calling the Trump administration's response to the pandemic among the worst failures of leadership in American history. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talks about what happens to President Trump's judicial nominations during a lame duck session of Congress if the president loses re-election. And former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on the current tensions between the U.S. and China. That's all ahead on C-SPAN Radio's Washington Today. And now to the presidential campaign. Donald Trump holding rallies in Michigan and Wisconsin. Joe Biden is in Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin this Friday, all battleground states where the polls showing tight races. As President Trump left the White House to board the helicopter Marine One, he spoke with reporters on the South Lawn. And one of the issues, Minnesota state and local officials limiting the number of attendees at a rally he was going to hold in Rochester, limiting it to 250 due to social distancing requirements to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. Here's the president.
There's never been anybody that has ever had bigger crowds or more enthusiasm than we have. So we have 25,000 people in Minnesota, which is our last stop today. 25,000 people want to be there, and they say you can only have 250 people. So they thought I'd cancel. But I'm not canceling, and we'll find out what happens. But we have 25,000 people in Minnesota, and they're there because they're angry at the riots, and they know that I stopped them, but I stopped them after it was requested. It's very late. They should have requested it 2 weeks earlier. But they're angry at Omar. They're angry at all of this stuff that's going on in Minnesota. And I think it's going to flip for the first time since 1973.
President Donald Trump on the South Lawn of the White House, a little noisy as the helicopter was right there. His campaign put out a statement that read, "Thanks to the free speech stifling dictates of Governor Tim Walz and Attorney General Keith Ellison, only the first 250 people will be admitted," referring to the rally in Rochester. The Minnesota Department of Health linking 28 coronavirus cases to other recent Trump campaign events in the state. Joe Biden holding a rally in St. Paul. This Friday, it is a drive-in event. Another topic that the president addressed on the South Lawn of the White House was where he will be election night. He confirmed reports about scrapping earlier plans to hold a rally or a party at the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C.
We haven't made a determination. We have certain rules and regulations. You know, Washington, D.C. is shut down. The mayor has shut it down. So we have a hotel. I don't know if it's shut down, if you're allowed to use it or not. But I know the mayor has shut down Washington, D.C. And if that's the case, we'll probably stay here or pick another location. Okay. I think it's crazy. Washington, D.C. is shut down.
President Trump outside the White House. His campaign releasing his schedule for Saturday through Monday ahead of Tuesday's election. 14 total rallies. 4 on Saturday, all in Pennsylvania. 5 on Sunday in Michigan, Iowa, North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. 5 more on Monday, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and 2 in Michigan. The final event he plans to hold is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And that's the same city where he held his final rally in 2016 during that campaign. As mentioned today, the president in Michigan in Waterford Township, a suburb of Detroit.
You know, I'm watching these Biden rallies. It's like there's nobody. Of course, he says that they want to do it that way on purpose. You know, another problem is nobody shows up. They were putting on the screen our rally. That's you. You're all famous, very famous. And his rally, there was nobody. At least he's doing a rally. He got out of the basement, so that's good. With your support, we will continue to bring back your jobs, cut your taxes, cut your regulations. Support our great police. Support our military. Defend our borders. Protect the Second Amendment, which is under siege. Protect always religious liberty and ensure More products are proudly stamped with the wonderful phrase, you know what it is? Made in the USA. And that's happening more and more. Thanks to our historic campaign to slash red tape and mobilize industry, we will deliver a safe vaccine to the American people in just a number of weeks, a couple of weeks. It's happening very fast. Great companies, the greatest companies of their kind in the world. And we got plenty of them there, too. Seniors will be first. We make seniors first, right? Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. They say, will you be the first one to take it? You know, it's a no-win situation. If I say yes, they'll say, he demanded to be first. If I say no, they'll say, he had no courage. Now, we're going to take care of our seniors first. We're going to take care of our doctors and frontline workers, everybody. But it's really, and by the way, you know, without it, we're still rounding the corner. We have it. But without it, we're round the corner. And it will be available free. We're doing the vaccine free. And the reason is that this wasn't your fault. This wasn't anyone's fault. This was China's fault. Just remember it. Our vaccine will eradicate the virus much more quickly and end the pandemic quickly, 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 because we want to have our life restored just to normal. That's all we want. That's all we want, normal. We just want normal. Bring us back 7 months. That's what we want, right? And that's what the whole world wants. Look what's happening in Europe. It's terrible.
President Donald Trump holding a rally outside Detroit, Michigan. He also criticized former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, a Republican, for endorsing Democrat Joe Biden for president. President Trump tweeting, I would never have taken the endorsement of the man who, through gross incompetence, poisoned the people of Flint, Michigan. And he called him a rhino, Governor Rick Snyder, Republican in name only. The Associated Press writes, when Joe Biden was last in Iowa, his campaign was on the verge of collapse, and he was soundly trounced in the caucuses by a former Indiana mayor, nearly 40 years his junior. He returns as the Democratic nominee, believing he is just days away from becoming president-elect. Biden's trip reflects the growing confidence among Democrats in the closing days of the campaign. Here's Joe Biden with a drive-in rally today in Des Moines.
Iowa hit a record number of daily cases yesterday with over 2,300 and a record number of hospitalizations, more than 600. We've now hit 9 million cases nationwide, a tragic milestone. And millions of people are out of work, on the edge, and they can't see the light. They don't know. It just looks dark right now for them. 82,000 Iowa jobs lost in this pandemic. And still, they've not come back. 70,000 jobs lost in Iowa since Donald Trump became president. Here at the fairgrounds, the Iowa State Fair canceled for the first time since World War II. And Donald Trump has given up. The White House Chief of Staff said it out loud last week. He said, we're not going to control the pandemic. We're not going to control the pandemic. In the debate last week with Donald Trump, he said, we're rounding the corner. It's going away. And only he could say, we're learning to live with it. Well, I may remember what I told him. We're not learning to live with it. We're learning, having to learn to die with it because of you. Donald Trump has waved the white flag. He surrendered to this virus. But the American people don't give up. Remember what he said when he did that interview? He said, although he knew about the crisis, he knew how bad it was back in January, the end of January. He decided not to tell the people because he worried they would panic. Well, guess what? We don't panic. He panicked.
Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, drive-in rally in Des Moines, Iowa. Those who wait until Election Day in Iowa to vote may find it a little harder. This reporting by NPR, the Iowa Public Radio News Network, and the Center for Public Integrity, finding hundreds of polling centers have closed due to the coronavirus in the state, leaving voters with fewer local options. A little bit more from the Joe Biden speech talking about taxes.
91 major corporations out of the Fortune 500 didn't pay a penny in tax last year. That's tens of billions of dollars. They're going to pay their fair share. Why should a firefighter, an educator, a nurse, a cop pay at a higher tax rate, which you do, than a major multi-billion dollar corporation? Why should you pay more taxes than Donald Trump, who paid $750? You want to know everything I don't like about Trump? Let me tell you, captured in one answer he gave. He was asked last time out about paying so little tax and allegedly being a billionaire. Know what he said? He said, it's because I'm smarter. I know how to game the system. Well, they ain't going to be gaming the system anymore in the Biden administration. They're going to start paying. And we're going to deliver tax relief for working families, the middle class, to help you buy your first home, pay for health care premiums, or child care, or care for an aging loved one, or being able to pay off your student debt, for God's sake.
Joe Biden in Des Moines, Iowa. A Quinnipiac University poll released this week showing a very close race in that state. Donald Trump at 47%, Joe Biden at 46%, within the margin of error. This presidential cycle, even some states expected to be solidly Republican, have been put into the toss-up category. That includes Texas. And Democratic vice presidential nominee Senator Kamala Harris was in Fort Worth today.
Today is the last day of early voting in Texas, and you all have been doing your thing. What did I hear? Was it 9 million people have voted so far? Early voting in Texas, 9 million? Now, we know this is no time to let up on the pedal, though, right? So I know people were, as people sent me pictures of standing in line at midnight this morning, I guess, last night, waiting to vote. There was a line. People are committed. And so today is the last day of early voting in Texas. We want to make sure we see it through. And then let's make sure on Election Day, everybody we know has made sure that their voice, their powerful voice, is represented in this election through their vote. Because there is so much at stake and so many reasons to vote.
Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris in Fort Worth, Texas. Besides candidates for president, Congress, and state and local office, many voters will have an opportunity to vote on ballot initiatives on Election Day. And joining us now to talk more about that is Josh Altick, project director with Ballotpedia. How many ballot measures are there this year from like a 30,000-foot view? And how does it compare to years past?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. So on November 3, there are 120 statewide ballot measures, and that's across 32 different states. That's a pretty low number, actually. It's maybe 25% lower than the average since 2010. But that doesn't mean that the year is not keeping us busy. There's a lot of really complex measures and a kind of record-breaking campaign spending that's going on, even though there's a lower number of statewide measures.
What are some of the more high-profile and controversial initiatives you've been tracking?
Yeah, lots of topics that people are used to seeing. Elections policy, taxes, and marijuana are kind of up there. In the elections policy arena, ranked choice voting is kind of making a relatively new appearance on the ballot. Alaska and Massachusetts is voting on ranked choice voting, and they would be only the second and third states to have such a process. In the taxes realm, Illinois is getting a lot of attention this year, which is unusual for that state in the ballot measure realm, because of a graduated income tax amendment, which is kind of breaking campaign spending records for that state and is one of the highest in the country. And then marijuana, everyone's used to seeing marijuana on the ballot. Something unique this year, several states, Arizona, Montana, and South Dakota, if they approve recreational marijuana, they would be the first states that have voted Republican in the last five presidential elections to actually approve recreational marijuana. So that's kind of a step into a new area for that movement.
Has there been any impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the ability for people to get ballot initiatives on the ballot, and also the projections of whether they're going to pass or not? Is there any impact there?
Absolutely, especially on that first point. We've tracked dozens of measures, campaigns trying to collect the thousands of signatures you need to qualify the measure for the ballot. And they just had to stop during the pandemic when there's a state lockdown. There really is no way to go out and stand outside your grocery stores and collect those signatures. So that had a huge impact on the citizen initiative side of things. It also affected the other side, which is legislatures putting measures on the ballot. There are fewer legislative referrals as well, and I think that's largely because legislators were in session for less time and they had other stuff to focus on.
Does every state have the ability to have a ballot measure?
Yes, every state has the ability to. In fact, every state but Delaware needs to use a ballot measure to change their state constitution. But what's not as well known is that only 26 states, about half the states, have a citizen initiative process where you can put a measure on the ballot through a signature petition. That's only half the states. So direct democracy does play a role across all 50 states, but it's most well-known and most interesting form, which is the signature petition side of things. That only exists in about half the states.
We're talking with Josh Altick with Ballotpedia. You mentioned that while the number of ballot measures this year is down compared to last year's, the spending on them is gone sky high. Why is that?
Right. Well, it's because, as you might imagine, the spending is concentrated on a lot of really notable measures this year. For example, Proposition 22 in California is the first time voters will decide a gig economy policy. That's the Uber, Lyft, and DoorDash measure that would make their app-based drivers independent contractors instead of employees per a new California law. That's a policy that's relevant in all the states. It's an issue that is new to the ballot and new to being considered by legislators. So I think there's a lot riding on that measure, and that's represented by the almost $200 million that the support campaign has spent to try and pass that measure. And likewise, there's a lot of new topics on the ballot. While this one isn't a huge money one, Oregon will be the first state to vote on a psilocybin mushroom initiative, a magic mushroom initiative. That one's interesting just because it could be the beginning of a trend, depending on how it goes. And there's other measures like that are first of their kinds. You look at Colorado with National Popular Vote and a bunch of others. When there's the stakes are higher when it's the first ever, and that's what's happening a lot this year.
Josh Altick, Project Director with Ballotpedia. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
And you can find more information about ballot initiatives at ballotpedia.org. Congress is out until after the election, when there is expected to be a lame duck session, at least to pass another government spending bill. The current one expires in early December. And in the Senate, apparently there will be votes on President Donald Trump's judicial nominations, even if he loses. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was on the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
I'm proud of what we did. Three Supreme Court justices, 53 circuit judges. Until last Monday, there wasn't a single vacancy on any circuit court in America. And that hadn't happened since 1980. So I think it's the single most significant long-term contribution we've made to the country to put young men and women on the bench who believe in the quaint notion that maybe the job of a judge is to actually follow the law.
A very practical question, Leader. There is now a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit for which there is nominee, and the death of a First Circuit judge has opened up a vacancy on that circuit. Certainly that was not expected and is to be regretted, but do you expect the Senate to fill those two positions in the lame duck term after the election?
Well, we're going to run through the tape. We go through the end of the year, and so does the President. We're going to fill the Seventh Circuit, and I'm hoping we have time to fill the First Circuit as well. And we are, by the way, confirming a district judge as soon as we get back after the election, and we're going to clean the plate, clean all the district judges off as well.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, on the Hugh Hewitt radio show. Senator McConnell himself running for re-election this year. He also said that a new coronavirus stimulus bill should be considered at the beginning of 2021, not in the post-election lame duck session of Congress, as some, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, have suggested. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today. A couple of more headlines. Bipartisan applause at President Trump signing into law what is called American Conservation Enhancement, or ACE Act. Republican Senator John Barrasso says it's the most significant wildlife conservation and sportsman law in decades. Democrat Tom Carper says the bill will support proven efforts to preserve important ecosystems in our country and promote innovative ways of addressing growing threats like invasive species and wildlife diseases. A prosecutor says Kennedy cousin Michael Skakel will not face a second trial in the killing of Martha Moxley. The announcement today coming 45 years to the day after the teenager was bludgeoned to death in her wealthy Connecticut neighborhood. Skakel served 11 years in prison before he was freed on bail in 2013 after a judge overturned his conviction, saying his trial lawyer did not adequately represent him. And at least 14 people have been killed in Turkey and Greece after a powerful earthquake hit the Aegean Sea, sending buildings crashing down and triggering what authorities have called a mini tsunami. Democratic presidential candidate in the U.S., Joe Biden, tweeting, "Jill and I send our prayers to the people of Greece and Turkey following today's earthquake. We're grateful for the brave rescuers saving others and for the governments of Greece and Turkey putting aside their differences to support each other." This from the Washington Post, an interim report released Friday by House Democrats blast the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus pandemic, labeling it among the worst failures of leadership in American history and an American fiasco. The chair of the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis is James Clyburn of South Carolina, and he was on a teleconference today.
Today's report exhaustively documents what has long been clear. The Trump administration's response to the coronavirus crisis has been a tragic failure. Yesterday, our country recorded the largest number of cases in a single day since the pandemic began, nearly 90,000. More than 9 months since this deadly virus landed on our shores, it is inexcusable that it continues to spread unabated. And it is unconscionable that the White House chief of staff has essentially surrendered, saying, and I quote, "We are not going to control the pandemic," end of quote. The American people are not surrendering, and neither is the Select Committee. Throughout the past 6 months, our work has identified numerous ways in which the pandemic and its impacts could be combated more effectively, efficiently, and equitably. But the administration has refused to do what is necessary to control the virus and mitigate its economic damage. Instead of leading our nation through this pandemic in a manner befitting the office that he holds, President Trump has repeatedly lied to the public to downplay the crisis, refused to take responsibility, and implement a comprehensive national plan to stop the spread of the virus, and actively hindered public health officials working around the clock to protect the American people. The president has failed to deliver desperately needed economic assistance to Americans who are struggling because of his failure to control the pandemic, and his administration and congressional Republicans have repeatedly prioritized the interests of Wall Street over the thousands of main streets across the country.
Congressman James Clyburn chairs the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis. The Twitter account Select Committee Republicans, that's at SelectGOP, tweeted, "Democrats' latest partisan report underscores how they've politicized the pandemic to the detriment of the American people. The facts clearly show President Trump's leadership has our country on a path to a full recovery." Also defending the Trump administration's handling of the pandemic, Peter Navarro, director of the White House Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy.
What we need to do is very carefully thread a needle between a lockdown and managing the risks of keeping the economy open. And here's the way we see it. We know two things. We know that the virus from the Chinese Communist Party, they infected us. It kills people. We also know that when you go to a lockdown, that kills people as well. It does so in different ways, whether it's depression and suicide or denial of chemotherapy or anything in between. What we've done, and this goes back to my memos you mentioned, Bob, February 9th, I started writing a series of memos which outlined on behalf of the president what has become our four-vector attack strategy to defeat the communist China virus. It's simply this. It's the domestic onshoring of our PPE, our gloves, our goggles, our N95 respirators. We've had great success on that, standing up factories in places like Rhode Island and Arizona with the Honeywell company. Secondly, we got testing. The initial thrust there, Bob, was to greatly expand the amount of testing we could do. But over time, more subtly, it was to steadily reduce the amount of time it took to get the results and also extend our reach to point of care. And we've at that point. The third vector, I think, is the most important. This is therapeutics. In many ways, therapeutics are as or more important than a vaccine in the short and medium run. Because this is a way of drastically driving down the mortality rate if you do get sick. This is the things like two things that the president took, remdesivir and monoclonal antibodies. But there's also things like convalescent plasma. We've done that really well. And then finally, I remember February 9th, I wrote a memo to the task force. It said, among other things, if we started a five-company horse race on vaccine development that week, we could have a vaccine by the end of November or early December. And we are actually tracking that. We've got a good chance of doing that.
Peter Navarro, top White House trade advisor, interviewed today by Washington Post reporter Robert Costa. From CNBC, stocks fell on Friday, led by major tech shares as Wall Street wrapped up a difficult week in which coronavirus cases rose, U.S. fiscal stimulus talks broke down, and traders braced for next week's presidential election. The Dow fell 157, NASDAQ down 274, S&P down 40. With so much focus on China over the coronavirus and trade, Stanford University's Hoover Institution held a discussion today titled Covert, Coercive, and Corrupt: Countering Chinese Communist Party Malign Influence in Free Societies. The opening remarks came from Condoleezza Rice, the Hoover Institution director and former Secretary of State under President George W. Bush.
This isn't the Cold War. The Cold War was an ideological struggle between the United States and the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union was a military giant, but a technological midget. China is a technological giant and well on its way to becoming a military giant as well. And so this is an incredible challenge. It is a challenge, though, to our values, to be true to those values while not allowing ourselves to be taken advantage of. We do not want a situation in which innocent people, just because they are of Asian descent, are somehow held in suspicion, whether they are citizens or green card holders or visitors. We want to remain open to the world and to them, and we do not want them to feel intimidated in any way. We want our universities to be cognizant of what is going on in some of the programs that have been sponsored by China. We want the universities to be cognizant of what is going on in our frontier technologies labs in AI and quantum computing. We want our universities to be cognizant that there are those who, under the guise of a fellowship or a PhD program, might in fact be those who would go back and help the PLA to make Chinese military power even stronger. We want to be cognizant of that. But we also want to remain universities which are open. And we want to influence the next generation of Chinese students, because one day we have to hope that that belief, that integration into the international system, openness to the world, will indeed have an impact on China too. First, we need to understand what we're facing. We need to understand all of the ways that China carries out policies of coercion or influence or increasing its military capability at our expense, using our knowledge. We need to understand the relationship between the Communist Party, the PLA, and research enterprises in China, with whom we would then have relationships. We need to understand, too, our tools for dealing with it. And our tools are many. A free people's, I believe, free people will always triumph. But free people have to be cognizant, and they have to be aware of what is going on around them.
Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, now director of the Hoover Institution, at today's virtual discussion that also include the current Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. You can find the full video of the event at cspan.org. And finally, Halloween is Saturday, a time for children to trick-or-treat and adults to have parties of their own during the coronavirus pandemic, though some warnings and urgings from leaders in both parties to take it easy. Here is New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, on Thursday.
Where we're telling people to play it safe, it's not just an idle message. It's a deeply felt message. People really should not travel for the holidays unless it's absolutely necessary, because unfortunately, pretty much everywhere else is doing worse at fighting the coronavirus. And if you go someplace else, the chance of bringing it back with you is high. We've got to be really careful this weekend. Halloween, you know, there's going to be a lot of celebration. That's normal, but we cannot have big gatherings. We cannot have big indoor events. If people want to trick or treat outdoors, small groups with masks on, that's great. Big gatherings, parties, that's not great at all. And we find out about them, we're going to have to break them up because it's dangerous. We got to buckle down.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio also urging some caution, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican.
It's everywhere, and it is advancing at a very fast pace. We've got to slow it down. So we can't be doing things like Halloween parties. We could carefully do trick-or-treat if we're careful in how we go about it. You know, we can do most things, but we can't do them the way we've always done them in the past.
Governor Mike DeWine, enjoy your holiday safely. And don't forget to set your clock back 1 hour on Saturday as standard time begins. Unless you're in Hawaii, American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and most of Arizona, which do not observe daylight saving time. Thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere and find this program and other programs from C-SPAN wherever you get your podcasts or at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good weekend.